Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
Yours truly, Curtis Lewa here to take you home again on your drive home at 5. On a very important evening for those people who reside in the city of New York. Because it's the first mayoral debate of many to come before the general election in November. But what's interesting is early in the morning, I got my free edition in the Metro newspaper, and there was a picture of Comrade Bill de Blasio, the mayor, and his challenger in the Democratic primary, Sal Albanese, who also will be challenging him in the general election with the New York State Reform Party nod. But they were side by side. And it's something I just didn't think would happen. Most people didn't think it would happen. Because early on in the process, people were discounting Sal Albanese's ability to take on this mayor. But tonight, New York One, in addition to other media outlets, will be sponsoring this first Democratic primary debate. And the host, a guy who has hosted many of these events over the years, is Errol Lewis, and he joins us again here on the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Errol.
Absolutely.
Now, Errol, this is a night when normally I'd be sitting with you and Herson Borrero on New York One as we would discuss the issues of the week. That won't be happening. Will I be able to sit in the front row where I can mad dog and I fornicate and get under the skin of Mayor de Blasio? Will you please let me sit in the front row?
Well, all of the tickets are gone. I don't know if you bothered to get one, but we're going to have a full house. It's going to be lit up like the 4th of July when we do a live event in a place like this. We've got lots and lots of lights, so I doubt anybody on the stage will be able to see past the second row.
Well, I know your bosses at Spectrum have told me specifically, Sliwa, here's a ticket, but do not be disruptive. Do not try to serve the mayor with any kind of court papers tonight.
Yeah, no Red Bull, no court papers, no dressing up as Ken Cuomo. We'll do that. We'll save that for another time, Curtis.
All right, but Errol, you've been involved in many of these kind of debates. First off, did you ever think that there would be a Democratic primary debate early on in the process?
Well, I'll tell you, I was hoping for a debate. I'll tell you that. And honestly, I did not know that there was going to be one because the official debates, and this is one of two official debates that are sanctioned by the Campaign Finance Board, are only open to those who have met certain financial criteria. The financial criteria are pretty steep. You have to have raised and spent $175,000. So as the summer was wearing on, I'm looking at the fundraising numbers and I'm thinking, oh no, there may not be a debate. And this was a concern for me, number one, as a citizen, because I'd rather have a debate than not. I think it's better to talk about the issues in public and let people make up their minds. And two, as the host of the show and the political anchor of the channel that was the official media sponsor or co-sponsor of the event, I wanted to make sure we had a good chance to sort of show our stuff. We're going to have some questioners on stage. We spent a long time putting this stuff together. And, you know, in the end, it would have all been for naught if there was no debate. So I'm glad this is happening tonight.
Now, you've tracked Sal Albanese's rise, almost like the phoenix out of the ashes. Nobody was giving him any opportunity whatsoever to do well against the mayor in the Democratic primary. What has happened in the last few months that has enabled him to get into this competitive mode where he's one-on-one on a stage tonight that you're hosting in this debate?
Well, there's two things that Sal Albanese needed to get to this point, and he did those things. Number one is there's a lot of discontent out there about the mayor and about some of his policies. Some of that comes from people who didn't want to see him elected in the first place and who just don't like his policies. They don't approve of his expansion, for example, of the city workforce or his spending policies, that kind of a thing. But the second thing, and this is the most important, is you have to be able to pick those pieces up together and present yourself as a viable alternative. And that is what Sal Albanese has done. So to the extent that he's already succeeded, he has succeeded in taking a sort of a vague discontent that was out there and sort of putting all of those pieces together and saying, I'm going to step forward and offer myself as an alternative. You know, if you're a little bit annoyed at the mayor, or if you're a lot annoyed at the mayor, come check out the ideas that I have about how we can go in a different direction. So he's doing what a good candidate should do. I wish there were more people like him, because I hear a lot more complaining about the mayor than I actually see people presenting alternatives. So, you know, Sal Albanese gets points for presenting an alternative.
All right. Now, the stage will be set. The mayor towers over Sal Albanese.
You're talking about physically.
Yeah.
Yes.
Will that have an impact on people both in the audience and those watching on TV or listening on radio?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. When there's a split screen, it's usually the faces, and we do that. There are going to be some exchanges between them, I'm pretty sure. And we would usually go to a split screen, and that doesn't show height. For the people in the auditorium, yeah, you'll be able to see that they're of different heights. And I guess there'll be a couple of wide shots, and I guess it might be apparent to the viewers at home as well. But it's an interesting question, because this comes up from time to time about, you know, does somebody want to bring in a step stool or, you know, do something else to kind of adjust for what does look like a visible height imbalance. I don't know, by the way, I don't know if that helps or hurts the mayor to be so tall. You know, sometimes it can kind of backfire where you look as if, because, you know, you're literally looking down your nose at somebody, and that can sort of leave its own impression that doesn't always work for politicians.
Now, Errol Lewis, the mayor, has a history of getting very testy with the media, people like yourself and others who would ask him questions. He gets very pretentious. Can he maintain a cool, calm, collective demeanor for 90 minutes without losing it?
You know, that's interesting. We've been trying to game this out, and I interviewed on our show a whole bunch of people who have run for mayor. So we had We had Gifford Miller, who ran for mayor in 2005, and we had Bill Thompson, who ran in 2009 and in 2013. And we talked about it with the Ruth Messenger, who ran back in 1997. And, you know, it's very possible to try and goad one's opponent into showing their least attractive side. And as we gamed it out, they were saying, you know, you can expect a lot of little jabs from Sal Albanese to try and annoy the mayor and get him to show his, not his friendly side, but his curt kind of dismissive side, which is not a good look for most people, and is definitely not a good look for Bill de Blasio. But, I assume, because these guys are all lifelong politicians, just like with boxers, they can see each other's strategies pretty early on, and hopefully, or I would expect to see them adjust for it.
Now, because this is in advance of the Democratic primary in September, you have the two divisions amongst Democrats, the hardcore Clintonistas and those that supported Bernie Sanders. There still are divisions in the ranks. In my mind, de Blasio has appealed to neither. He's not really accepted by either factor. Will the mentality of the Democrats watching tonight or listening or viewing this be affected at all about where they are classified, if they are strong Bernie Sanders advocates or Clintonista advocates?
Oh, that's an interesting question. And, you know, we don't disclose, of course, in advance what questions we're going to ask, but and we leave enough room for the candidates to ask each other questions that if it does come up tonight, that would be an interesting question, because I frankly had never thought about it until the way you just put it, that while Bill de Blasio was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager when she first ran for Senate in 2000, he also had a falling out with a lot of her followers because he didn't jump on board with her early on. On the other hand, it's not as if he was solidly in the Bernie Sanders camp, because in the end he endorsed Hillary Clinton. So the reason
I bring that up, Errol, is that Sal Albanese actually attacks Bill de Blasio from the left because he voted for Bernie Sanders.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and you know there's such divisions amongst Democrats now. They haven't gotten over the primary and the general election that it might actually bleed into the, at least the local Democratic primary if the perception was is that, wow, here's Sal Albanese. He supported Bernie Sanders. They obviously were fighting as insurgents versus the standing Clintonistas who even rejected their own Bill de Blasio.
Well, you know, what's interesting is if there is a viable anti-establishment movement within the Democratic Party, the sitting mayor of the city is the establishment. There's just no getting around that. So if Sal Albanese is seen as the champion of the anti-establishment forces, of the folks who always vote against the county machines and who want reforms and who don't like the way the party is, the direction the party is going in, then, yeah, sure, maybe that's a little bit more of a way for him to ride.
Well, I'll tell you what, Errol Lewis will be hosting the mayoral debate tonight. It's one-on-one, Bill de Blasio versus Sal Albanese in advance of the Democratic primary. I normally hate giving up my lens lice time on New York One, but tonight, no problem, because in addition, as New York State Chairman of the Reform Party, I'm so proud to have Sal Albanese as our mayoral candidate, who will be in the general election regardless of what happens in the Democratic primary. And you couldn't ask for a better host to oversee this process and make sure that everyone gets their fair share of responses and then let the voters make their own determinations.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
He'll be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Gabriel.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, little merengue. So this must mean we're talking about Bobby Menendez screwing over the hookers in the DR and not even leaving him a tip.
With the completion of the jury selection and his federal trial on corruption in Newark. But I have a feeling hookers are not involved here. Although, to try to catch up to what's happening in Newark, let's go to the man who's got his finger on the pulse, Paul Molshine, columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so this trial involving U.S. Senator Bobby Menendez has nothing to do with the fact that he stiffed those hookers in the DR in Santo Domingo, didn't even leave him a tip.
I don't think he stiffed them. I think the question there was that the eye doctor paid them. I don't think he paid, you know, he would pay for anything himself. He's a tightwad.
Well, most politicians are, as you know. They always expect a Medici of theirs, a political sponsor or supporter, to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to paying the bills. But you've written a column with the picking of the jury, and I guess the actual court presentation will start September 6th. And you think that this will be, in fact, more interesting than the continued investigation into the Russian-Putin collusion with our presidential election. How so?
Oh, well, I just don't think there was any, you know, collusion. I love the way the media uses that term as if it meant something, you know. Like, what did the Russians, who did they collude with? What happened? The only thing we know so far is that Podesta got his email hacked because his password was password. So that's about all we know. That's all that's been proven. So I just think the whole Russia story is a fraud.
But now there is a Russian involved here in the Bobby Menendez case, right? Is it a svelte vixen?
Svetlana Bulchik. Yeah, she might be Ukrainian, but she's a gorgeous blonde who was one of the people who went along on these plane rides. Yeah. And, oh, the other angle is Menendez tried to say that Cuba may have launched a smear campaign against him and started all the rumors that he was, the original rumor was that he was having sex with underage prostitutes. Now that didn't hold, that was not substantiated, but it led to the entire investigation where all this came out. So if the Cubans did do it, they did it very well. They didn't leave their fingerprints. And as one of my friends who in Florida who follows this says, you know, the Cubans certainly have agents running around the Dominican Republic. And if they hear of a U.S. senator going to parties at a luxurious, Campo de whatever it was, the luxurious deluxe golf course, you know, they would be the very first to take advantage of it and maybe plant something in the media. So his problem was he was going to all these parties at this deluxe beachside resort, not that he actually did, you know, Not that the Cubans caught him. If the Cubans caught him, that reflects even worse on him.
But now, what is the basis of the case that the federal government is trying him on multiple corruption charges?
Basically, it's that he did all these favors for Dr. Mengele and... I'm sorry, Melgen. Mengele, what made me think that?
Well, anyhow, you know, the Nazi propagandists. We've been hearing so much about Nazis of late with Charlottesville.
It was like sticking needles in people's eyes that didn't need it. That was that was an actual charge against him. So that does make you think of Dr. Mengele. But it was that he did all these favors for him, which he did. There's no doubt that he intervened with the government on behalf of the doctor in his Medicare dispute, also intervened in the doctor's effort to get a lucrative contract to monitor the port security. And the question is whether that rises to the level of a crime. And the problem Menendez has is if it was a normal constituent, you could say, this guy is my constituent. I did everything I could to help him, like I would help any constituent, right? But if the guy, you're from Jersey and the guy's from Florida and you're doing him all these favors, I think people are going to say that's a slightly different case.
Now, what about the story that was attached to U.S. Senator Bobby Menendez where he had lobbied heavily for that H-1 special visa for that drop-dead gorgeous Brazilian bun-bun model that apparently he was having the urge to merge with?
Well, I think there were more than one, but they may, as I recall the story, they were Melgen's alleged girlfriends, not Menendez's. Menendez, I think, you know, he went to a lot of parties where there were a lot of available girls. Of course, nobody ever, you know, pulled a Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky on him and found any dress or anything like that. So there's no proof. But he did help get girls into the country, at two, I believe. I suspect that's not the biggest charge against him. This port security contract, under federal current federal law, you have to take an official act on behalf of someone for that to be considered illegal.
Medici, the doctor, Melgen, his procurer, he not only ripped off Medicare for incredible amounts of money for services that were not rendered to patients down in Florida, but this whole idea that he was going to provide all the equipment for Homeland Security for the Dominican Republic to provide security for their port when he had never done it before. Why was Menendez propelling him to the top of the list when this doctor had never been involved in any aspect of Homeland Security?
Well, not only that, Menendez was trying to keep the United States from giving the equipment to the Dominican Republic so that instead they would have to honor this contract with Melgen's company to pay for the equipment, which is, I think this is the strongest charge against him. It just stinks outright. And as my source down there points out, and I've spent a lot of time in Latin America, port security is Christmas every day. I mean, the amount of stuff that comes in, that if you're an enterprising young port security agent, you can get your hands on, is just astronomical.
Well, do appreciate that, Paul Molsheim, columnist for the New York Star-Ledger. The jury has been selected in the trial against, Bobby, let me find me a hook of Menendez, and I'm not going to tip her when she takes me around the world in just 80 seconds. Now, this will be an interesting case in downtown Newark Federal Court that could light everybody up, particularly since his Medici was his procurer of models with the H-1 visas. Same way that the president's wife, Melanie, was able to find her way into our country so many years ago.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practice like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
Disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
Can't you smell that smell? 554. It is the smell of swill. that permeates from deep in the subterranean hell known as our subway system, and this, the summer of hell for commuters. And you've been hearing our traffic guy, Jeff McKay, talk about how a problem with a garbage train in the subway system this morning at 14th Street has tied most of the system into knots, not only through the morning rush hour, but through the evening rush hour, too, including major delays on the B, D, N, Q, R, and W trains. And how did this come about? Was this a switching problem from track to track? No. Was this a signal problem, of which there are many, starting with the number 7 train and permeating into the other lines, both the numbered lines and alphabet lines? No. This was caused by a train removing trash. And when it was at 14th Street, the garbage fell into the tracks. And then all of a sudden, a Q train struck the garbage in the tracks. And the garbage had not been properly secured. Now, who do we blame that for? A deadbeat slacker, no-show job guy for the MTA, the money-taking agency, that is always interested in taking your dough, right? And actually, you have the TWU Local 1 crew, the most radical union in the city, is claiming, oh, it's not our guy. It's not his fault. Of course it's his fault. He was responsible. And once the train hit the garbage, the emergency brakes were initiated on the Q train. And the train was eventually cleared, but later got stuck again at DeKalb Avenue because of a power issue. Now, we were told that the MTA spent $23 million of our hard-earned tax dollars on what they call 3 ghost trains. And the concept of a ghost train is, instead of going down into the tracks like work crews used to years ago in the wee hours of the morning, and with a shovel and a hefty trash bag and a broom, they would clean up the flotsam and jetsam at both catch basins on both sides of the station. Instead, now they have these super-duper trains that actually vacuum up the garbage out of the tracks. And yet most of those trains are in need of repair and are in the yards. So who's running the MTA? The part-time director, Joe Loder, or is he spending most of his time over at the NYU Medical Langone Center, which is where he gets paid? How is it that these problems can continue to take place? It's malfeasance on the part of the workers. Get your act together, MTA.